fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app.
Get juicy California red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA Choice boneless beef chuck roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, this is Stefan and Tatiana, and welcome back to our podcast. We're excited to be with you guys today. We're in a different location. We're back in Vancouver, which is our home. I've been here for the summertime, which has been really great. But we wanted to dive into some more topics for you guys today. It seems like you guys have been really enjoying the ones that we've released so far. So thank you so much for your support with that. I want to remind you guys that you can catch these episodes also on Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your podcast, as well as here on YouTube, Project Life Mastery and Tatiana James on YouTube. But we had a few different topics that we wanted to dive into today. We're going to talk a little bit about selling on Amazon, specifically Amazon private labeling versus Amazon wholesaling. There's been a bit of a shift in our perspective and some things that we've been learning about that. And people always ask us what direction to go, what our thoughts are on these business models. And so we wanted to share with you guys some of those thoughts. And we're also going to talk a little bit more about relationships. That's always a topic that people enjoy hearing from us on. I just did a session for my Life and Business Mastery Accelerator, and I get a lot of relationship questions every month. So I actually brought some of those questions here that I thought would be really interesting for us to discuss, to get both of our perspectives on, and to dive into some of that fun stuff as well. So maybe first off, we've been back in Vancouver for summertime. Do you want to share just how your life has been here? We've been in Panama for quite a while, and now being back, it's been a bit different, yeah. But how's it been here?
Well, it's always nice to come back here to Vancouver because it is a gorgeous city when the sun is shining. And when you're here during the summertime, you always feel like, well, who would ever leave this beautiful place? You know, it's such a well-built city. And it's really a city for active people. And that's what we love about it. So we've got some bikes. We got Lucas. We got a carriage for Lucas that he can go in. We also got a bike seat that goes on the back of our bike. Yeah. And it's been really fun just cycling around the city, awesome. Going to different water parks and parks. And he's been having a blast just watching everything that moves by. And so it's great because Vancouver, you can really bike around the whole city. Yeah. It's fairly safe. And so we've been taking advantage of that, enjoying all the outdoor things that we can do here. And we have this beautiful seawall here in Vancouver, which I think is the best part of the city, in my opinion. It's the largest unobstructed seawall in the world, actually.
Oh, wow.
And we have very easy access to it here where we live. And so we go every single morning. Our morning routine is we go on a nice long walk. We go with Kobe, we go with Lucas, we stop by some parks, and we just really enjoy the fresh air in the morning and, you know, seeing some birds and it's nice. Yeah. So,
yeah, no, it's been really great being back. Just from my perspective, you know, last time that we were back in Vancouver, we gave birth to Lucas, and that was a crazy experience, but we were also moving because there was a renovation being done in our apartment, and just the timing of things. It was very, very difficult at that time, but I felt like we didn't really get an opportunity to enjoy summertime as much as we typically would because, you know, having a newborn baby, there's only so much that we could really do. And so this time around, it's been really great because I feel like we've been able to do and experience and live so much more.
Yeah.
And I think especially at the stage that Lucas is now has been really awesome because, as you said, we can take him to all these places. You know, we took him to the aquarium and took him to the zoo. You know, took him to Grouse Mountain where he saw the bears and the owl. And, you know, he just loves that. You know, it's just so amazing to watch through his eyes and just how much these simple things for him seeing it and experiencing it for the first time is such a big deal. So I really enjoyed that aspect of Vancouver. And coming back here, it's almost like you get to be a tourist again in your own city and do all these tourist attractions that, you know, you grew up, you know, doing and having access to your whole life, but being able to do that with your child and just enjoy just how great it is here, especially during the summertime, has been awesome.
Yeah. And of course, seeing family and friends, reconnecting with everyone's been great. And I feel like I'm always busy when I'm here. I feel like every day I've got meetings and schedule and things, appointments. And just because there's it's such easy access. This is a walkable city. You can walk from one to the other in like 40 minutes, and that's really cool. Yeah. And so anything you need, you have access to, and you can easily walk there. And I love that. It's fantastic. So we've been enjoying ourselves. We are going to be leaving pretty soon. We're going to be heading up to Sun Peaks at the end of this week. And we're excited about that because we purchased a property in Sun Peaks. What is it, 2 years now?
Last year.
Oh, last year. We haven't really had much of a chance to enjoy it for an extended period of time. So it is like a rental property. It's on a ski resort, and it's a gorgeous place to be. So we're going to go up and enjoy it for a little while before we head back to Panama. And I'm looking forward to going back to Panama, I must say. Like, I'm looking forward to going to my home and being in the ocean again and just the comforts of being there. So I do feel like now I do feel like we have two homes now. I really feel like we have Canada and we have Panama, and they both do feel like home.
Yeah. And you know, that's something I've spoken about a little bit is I think one of the greatest benefits of pursuing wealth in your life, at least one of the benefits that we've gotten, is having the two home lifestyle. I really value the two home lifestyle. I couldn't really see myself living in one location in one home year after year after year. I found that by having the experience of being in Panama for half the year, being in Canada for a couple months, I found that usually after, like, there's an amazing experience I often find when you come back, you know, when both places you've been there enough where you have that feeling of home. And when you come back from Panama to Vancouver or Vancouver to Panama, there's this high that you experience when you first come back. It's just like, wow, like you appreciate all these aspects of it that you normally would grow accustomed to when you're in the same environment for such a long period of time. So coming back to Vancouver, it's like, wow, such an amazing city, so beautiful, so much the nature and like the things to do here. And so you really have this high for a few weeks or a few months. And then I also found that when I'm in one location for a long enough period of time, a lot of that wears off. A lot of that you just kind of get kind of maybe in a routine, which can be great too. But I found you can kind of get stuck in some patterns, maybe some, you know, bad habits. Maybe you just kind of feel a little bit uninspired and you kind of want a new location. And so I found the variety of then after, you know, kind of getting tired of being in one spot for a while, then going to the next place that also feels like home. Yeah. And you have all your stuff and you have the familiarity and the people and all of that. It's just that the duration of like half and half throughout the year just works really, really well. And I value that so much. And you get a different perspective on things too. But I always feel like it's a new opportunity every time I go back to Panama or come back. Yeah, it's like a fresh start. You break up all the bad habits and patterns and you can really establish some good momentum going.
Yeah. So. Yeah, yeah. And I would say also like the contrast between Panama and Canada, even just traveling, the amount of traveling we did, you really kind of realize what you took for granted. Even here, just walking down the street, I see people with like their wallet in their back pocket. I'm like, oh, that would never fly in some of these other countries, or just holding their phone in their hand. Like if you're in Brazil, you're easily going to get your phone, you know, it's going to get robbed. You know, my cousins, they carry two cell phones with them. They carry a burner phone and like their actual iPhone so that when they are being robbed, they can just give that burner phone, which is unfortunate, but that's the reality of the situation in Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah. And I think with Sun Peaks too, I'm not sure if you've even shared that with your audience, but like I did a video sharing the property that we bought in Sun Peaks. And like one of the reasons that we got that place is also for the variety of just getting out of the city. So like we love being here in downtown Vancouver in the city. It's so much to do here and it's very lively and exciting. But we've also found, you know, we love the interior of British Columbia and being in the outdoors. And the Sun Peaks property really has worked well because it's in Sun Peaks is like a ski resort, as you said. And it's really good for short-term rentals. So we have a property management company that manages it all year round. But during the ski and snowboard season, it gets booked up like almost every night. And that works well for us because that's when we're not interested in coming back to Canada. You know, we often come back during summertime. And so you can basically get a good return on your investment in terms of making the money from the short-term rental income during the wintertime. And then when we're back during summertime, it's a lot quieter and we can get some personal use out of it as well. So instead of traditionally with a rental property, you know, you get a long-term tenant, 12-month lease. And because of that, you don't get any personal use out of it. But because of this short-term rental model of the winter time really being the peak season of where it generates most of the money, that makes up, it's almost as if you have a tenant in there for, you know, 12 months out of the year. So that's cool. And we only went up a little bit last year when we bought it. And so this time will be the first time going for a month and being in that environment and, you know, enjoying it and everything and just, it should be fun.
We want to raise Lucas to be very outdoorsy, you know, to like, to enjoy being outdoors and not stuck in four walls and on a computer all day long. And so, Sun Peaks is a great place to do that. There's lots of hiking. You know, you can get into dirt biking, mountain biking, there's a lot of value that we can have there. I will say though, that with this lifestyle of having, you know, living between two places, it does involve work, you know, especially because we are renting out. We don't rent out our house in Panama, but we rent out our property in Vancouver. We rent out the Sun Peaks place. So, because in, you know, Vancouver, you know, every time we come back, we have to move things. And it's just, I kind of calculate that there's about 1 to 2 weeks of my life that I kind of get consumed with packing and unpackaging. Yeah. And it's just, it feels sometimes like a lot of work, but ultimately it is worthwhile because we do have a lot of variety and a lot of fun through these different locations.
Yeah, definitely gets a little bit busy when we're getting ready to travel again and whatnot, but there's definitely some great benefits to this lifestyle, which has been really awesome. So how about we transition to the Amazon? So you guys probably know that on our YouTube channels we have put a little bit of content on selling on Amazon. We did we've been a little bit disconnected from that space for a while. As you guys know, we were really heavily involved in it. And then we kind of got out of it for a while, but we wanted to reconnect with it. And so we have a lot of great connections of people that are incredibly successful selling on Amazon and just doing e-commerce in general. And so we reached out to people we've learned from, interviewing them, talking to them, kind of finding out what the landscape is, finding out what the opportunities are. You know, we brought on Matt Clark and Mike McCleary from Amazing Selling Machine. Recently talked to Steven Summers from Marketplace Superheroes. You know, both programs that we've really supported and shared because we've had such great experiences with ourselves. And we want, you know, these are guys that are like in the trenches, building the businesses, like really heavily involved with it. And so I'd like to hear just from you, like, you know, private labeling, wholesaling, they're different models, have a lot of similarities. But yeah, what was kind of the distinctions that you pulled from, I guess, the last couple months of just kind of, you know, revisiting a lot of the Amazon space and talking to different people and kind of looking at the opportunities and the landscapes today?
Yeah. So, I mean, the question is always, is it still an opportunity? Is there still an opportunity there to sell on Amazon? And the answer is yes, there still is. Of course, everyone always wishes that they started sooner, but today's a great day as well to get started. Now, the landscape has changed since you and I were selling on Amazon. The playing field is different. And so the model that I promote now is slightly different. My tone has changed a little bit. So when I started, I was doing the private labeling model, and that's the model that I had so much success with. And I was sharing that model and promoting it. And a lot of people had success with it too. And it's still a model that people can follow today and have success with. However, it is, you know, there is more risk with it and just more, I would say, more work that can be involved.
It's like more
you have to learn a lot of different skill sets to really apply them into your private label business so that it can be a success. So I find that that model, although the rewards are great, I find that it takes a certain person for it, and that it can just be harder for someone who's, you know, never seen an online business, touched an online business before to have success with. So the model that I now see as a greater opportunity, lower barrier of entry, lower risk, and higher success is with the wholesale model. And so the reason being is because with the wholesale model, you're not building your own brand. So private label is all about you go and you build your own brand. You put your name on a product that already exists. You're not you're not inventing something. Yeah. You know, that's the easier part of it. You go find a manufacturer who's already manufacturing the products that you wish to sell, and maybe you make some modifications to them, but ultimately you're just slapping your brand name on that, and then you're going to sell it on Amazon and marketing it under your brand. And some people really like the idea of having their own brand, but that comes with a lot more responsibility and a lot more work. And so with the wholesale model, you're not selling your own brand. Mm-hmm. And that's what's great about it, is that you reduce the risk because you're not selling something brand new on Amazon. You're not rolling out your brand, introducing it to the Amazon marketplace and hoping that it does well. What you're doing is you're going and researching some of the top brands that are selling on Amazon, very popular brands, and you're seeing, okay, can I sell that product as well? So those products are already selling on Amazon, and you're just figuring out, can I also become a reseller of this product? And that's where people get a little confused. They're like, why would, if a brand is, you know, already selling on Amazon, why would I be allowed to sell that product as well? Why would I increase the competition? And so I think the confusion comes from, because when they think of a brand like the brand that I created and sold on Amazon, if I am the brand owner and I'm selling that product on Amazon, of course, I don't want someone to come in and be selling my product as well. You know, I'm a small seller. As a brand owner, I'm small. But what you're doing with the wholesale model is you're approaching these bigger brands, these brands that they're probably not selling their own products on Amazon. There's a third party
like Disney,
seller that's
Nike,
selling it.
Like, you know, massive brands like that.
Yeah, massive brands.
We're smaller too, but that's just the biggest that,
Yes. And so third party sellers are already probably selling it on Amazon. So what you can do is you can just become another one of those sellers. And then what happens is you have to win the buy box. So multiple people can be selling the same product, but the sale is rewarded to a different seller depending on several factors. And so you lower the risk because you're just selling something that you can view the sales history, and you can see that, listen, this product's been selling really well since, you know, many, many months ago or years ago. I can see that. I know that if I buy, you know, 50 units today, I know it's going to sell within the next week or so. So you have that confidence and that security. And then also, because you're selling something that is a brand like that online, you have also the confidence that if for whatever reason you can't sell it on Amazon, you can sell it on another marketplace.
Yeah. Now, I think just to kind of run through each of the models, the pros and cons of each. So the private labeling model, which is the one that we promote and share the most and is a great model, I'd say the biggest hurdles that people have is finding a product. That's always the number one barrier that I have seen people have. Even people that get an online course, they learn a criteria, they learn there's, you know, many research tools, Helium 10, Jungle Scout, Zoof. There's many tools and things that are really designed just to help people with that one process, because that's such an important process. The product that you pick will make or break your success. You know, if you pick a product that has high demand and low competition, good profit margins, you can stand out a little bit and be unique. In some cases, you can launch that product and day one, you're getting sales. And it's just, you just figure things out. The perfect window in that algorithm where that product ranks for certain keywords and just organically gets those sales flowing in, or you turn on ads and it sells very easily. But it became more and more difficult to find that, because there are so many products that are out there that it requires a greater level of creativity that I think a lot of people can struggle with. A lot of people, they're looking for products that are selling, yes, but they're lacking the creative element to think about and evaluate the market to see, okay, how can I stand out? How can I be a little bit different? What does this market want? You know, they're trying to read the reviews of other competing products, you know, to see, okay, you know, what could I change or improve or modify, whatever it is. And so a lot of people I found, they were very nervous and scared to launch a product and to commit to one product, because when you do decide on a product and then you go and find suppliers, let's say in China through Alibaba, and you're, you know, finding out the minimum order quantities and shipping it from China to the United States, you know, you realize, okay, I'm going to have to invest a couple $1,000s in this new product that they're really nervous and almost scared to pursue because they're like, you know, what if it doesn't sell? What if it doesn't work? How am I going to, you know, get back this money? You know, I'm going to be sitting on 500 or 1,000 units of inventory and, you know, kind of be in this position where I don't really know what to do with it. And especially if you're a new entrepreneur, you don't know marketing, you don't know, you've never done any of this before. That was a very scary proposition for some people. Obviously there's a lot of people that had the confidence and they went in and they just, you know, went for it and succeeded or didn't, you know, whatever, like that didn't hold certain people back. But definitely I noticed there was a segment of people that just would not even start because of that uncertainty. And there's, you know, mindset components and fear of failure, like a lot of things that we would have to coach people through and try to help them with because of the level of risk that was involved in just launching a product. And then I think just with that too, with Amazon, there's really only kind of two ways to sell your product, which would be organically of ranking it for certain keywords, which becomes more competitive and requires, you know, there's tools like Helium 10 and, you know, tools that can help you with that process to find keywords and whatnot. But people would feel, you know, I don't have the reviews yet. You know, I'm competing with companies and products that have been around so much longer. You know, the other option is to turn on ads, but then that's more money. And what if I spend a certain amount of money and it doesn't get a return? I break even. And there's kind of all these obstacles there that it required, I think, a higher level of skill for someone to really succeed at as a beginner. And then the other option is like, okay, well, those are the ways you could do it on Amazon. So if you really want a greater competitive advantage, then let's build and expand your brand outside of Amazon. So let's build a Shopify store. Maybe you can build a blog. You got to get on social media, Instagram or Facebook, you know, put out your product, find influencers. Like there's countless ways that you can market and sell your product. But I think for someone that is a beginner, it's very difficult when you're first starting out to do so many things simultaneously, because each one of those things is like a new learning curve. You know, like learning social media, learning, you know, setting up your own store on Shopify. So I just found that what I noticed is that for a lot of people, it was a lot, you know, especially as like a side gig and a side hustle. Now the, you know, those are some of the cons and the challenges of it, but there's no doubt the rewards are pretty amazing if you can really get a product that's selling well, mm-hmm. especially because when it is your own brand, one of the ways that a lot of people make money from that business model is selling their business. They've built an asset that has a lot of value and there's a big market of people that want to buy e-commerce businesses. You know, you sold your business. There's many brokers and websites and places where you can sell. There's a big market of people that want that. So you can really get a great payout of six figures, seven figures, even beyond that, if you do build a business that way. But if you contrast that to the wholesaling model is way less risk, as you said, because you don't have to take the risk of starting a brand. And just the process, by the way, of starting a brand, you got to think of a name for your company. You need to create a logo for the company. You need to create the packaging for your product. You know, those are also elements, you know, images for your product. You have to set up your Amazon listing and your bullet points and your description. And, you know, you're kind of taking on that role as well. But with the wholesaling, you don't need to do that. With the wholesaling, you're basically finding other brands and products where the Amazon listing already exists. And you can use these tools like Helium 10, Jungle Scout, and you can look to see how much these products are making. And these are brands that people already know about. They're already selling. They're already making money. And you can see, you know, wow, that product is selling. Because these are bigger brands, it could be, you know, 10,000, 50,000, 100,000 plus per month. And so you can see that and evaluate these opportunities. And then you can find a distributor who basically has the rights to sell a whole catalog of products. So, you know, Disney products and, you know, whatever types of products that you can think of that we all know and use. And they have the rights to it. And you can basically order from them at a wholesale price, 10 units of that product. And you can, you know, take that product, just send it to Amazon using FBA. And so buying 10 units of a product, let's say you buy the Monopoly board game, you know, and you buy 10 units of that, and maybe it costs you a couple $100 or something, you send it to Amazon. And then you can get under the listing that Monopoly is selling under, and you can, let's say, get under the buy box for that. Well, that's a way that you can be getting sales relatively quickly without taking that level of risk. And because of that, you can really divert your focus to many different products. You can take, you know, you can throw shit against the wall, see what sticks. You can try 10 different products, and the ones that are selling, only once it's selling, you can buy more, you can scale it up, and you can really grow your business from that. And so just from that one aspect, I think, of the risk factor, the financial risk, the time risk, the barriers that people were having with private labeling, with the creativity and the fear and the mindset and all those different variables that are involved in it, this business model was just, it's just so much simpler, easier to wrap your head around it. It's more of a true side hustle, I feel, where it's not going to overly consume your time. You could do it on the side. You're not going to make as much money, and that's maybe the con from it, is that, you know, not as much potential to make as much as you will selling your own products under your own brand. It's not really a sellable asset or anything.
Like with your own brand, with the private label, you do have a higher profit margin. Mm-hmm. Than you would with the wholesale. But the wholesale, like you said, like you can have you can be selling a variety of different products simultaneously, and you can really grow that a lot faster in many ways than with the other model.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of people too, you know, the reality is most people, I think when they're first starting, they're not necessarily looking to make millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars. They're looking, you know, most people, I think their situation is they have a job and it's providing income for them. And they're not really happy with their job. They're not making as much as they really want to. They don't have the lifestyle that they want. So they want to build a side hustle. And they want that side hustle. The number one goal is just to make enough money from that side hustle where they can quit their job. And when I look back at, for both of us, one of the biggest changes that we experienced in our life, it was not making millions of dollars. It was just making enough where you're free from having a job, working for someone else. And I remember for me, you know, early on, that was just a couple thousand dollars a month. It wasn't that much, you know, like I had a modest lifestyle. I didn't really have big expenses, but just that couple thousand bucks a month would replace what I was getting from my job. And that in and of itself, you know, allows people to travel the world, to be at home with their kids, to have flexibility, to go to the gym throughout the day, to like take the day off if they want to. There's so much freedom that comes with that. And that's one of the biggest lifestyle changes and one of the biggest benefits that someone will get. And it doesn't take that much to do it. And I think if you're looking at, if that's the goal, if the goal, let's say, is to make $5,000 a month or $10,000 a month, this is a better model to do that with. That's also faster to get results with, because also with the private labeling, how long does it take to even know whether or not your product sells? It can take maybe a couple months to just launch your product and get it up there. And one of the challenges that some people had too is that by the time they'd done their research on their products and found a viable product, to the time they actually launched it, when they launched it, they're like, oh, the landscape's changed. You know, there's more competitors now that weren't there 3 months ago when I was, you know, researching this on Helium 10.
And I think also one of the barriers is that because you do have to wear a lot of hats and learn about a lot of different skill sets, you have to learn how to do keyword research for building your listing. You have to learn how to do Amazon ads. You have to learn how to do branding. You have to trademark your brand. Like there's a lot of different elements. And so that people can, that takes a lot of time. Even,
you know, returns and reviews and customer complaints. And
you have to build your customer service out if you decide you're not just going to be selling on Amazon. So there's a lot of components that can kind of hold you back in launching first and foremost. Whereas with this other model of wholesale, you don't even have to make your own listing. You just use a listing that's already out there. So really all you're doing, the most work that you have to do is you have to find a distributor and browse through their catalog and decide what product you're going to purchase and then send it to Amazon and watch the sales roll in. You don't have to do marketing. You can do marketing. You don't have to. So there's just way less work involved. And I think that's why so many more people are attracted to this model. Like you said, it's much more realistic to consider it a side hustle because it's really something that you can do on the side of having a full-time job rather than it taking over your life. And if you do want to scale it where it does become a full-time job, you really do, there's definitely potential there. And I think a lot of moms are very attracted to this model because it is something that they can do while they're at home with their babies and, you know, put in an hour or two a day into this and you can see some good results with it pretty relatively quickly.
Yeah. And I think also the way that I've also looked at things too is being an entrepreneur everyone has a different idea of what level or capacity they want to be an entrepreneur at. And it's such a long-term journey that oftentimes where you start kind of springboards you to other opportunities. Yeah. And I think what I've kind of learned and seen from my own experience, from your experience, is I think that the smarter move is to start somewhere that's not that intimidating, that is newbie friendly, quick, low risk, not that expensive, side doesn't require as much time. You get your feet wet, you make money, you get results, and then what happens is you get confidence. The confidence is so important. The confidence is everything, because that confidence leads to that momentum that you get. And that momentum leads to, you know, like when we look at both ourselves, the money that we've made, there was a point where you get this momentum where just things snowball. Like just you go from making a couple thousand a month to tens of thousands a month to maybe even beyond that. Like just it's crazy how fast that goes. But it's usually the beginning that's the slowest because you're going through the learning curve and all that sort of stuff. And then usually also once you've been through that learning curve, you have experience and knowledge doing something and confidence from that, then you are kind of looking at the landscape in a different way. You're looking at it with confidence and some maybe some money in the bank, and you can actually evaluate opportunities and you see maybe better opportunities mm-hmm. that you know is a better opportunity because of your experience. You wouldn't really know if it is or good or not because you don't have any experience. That experience is really valuable to help you evaluate different opportunities. And then I think from there, it can open up a lot of doors for people if they want to go the private label route, if they want to go in a whole host of other directions. Like I have friends, for example, that started on Amazon and now they're running agencies. You know, like my friend Mike is in Colombia, sold matcha green tea on Amazon and basically identify like, hey, I'm just really good and I really enjoy running Amazon ads. I'm really good at the analytics of that. And he realized there's a big market of people, Amazon sellers need help with that. And so he actually built an agency providing that for people. And I know so many people that they start here and then it opens up all these other doors and opportunities. And I think that's one way to look at it. And it doesn't mean that you have to, like there's some people that might just be content. Like I'm just good running this business on the side. It suits my lifestyle. I don't need to scale beyond that. But I think that's the cool thing about it is that, you know, if you start an opportunity that allows you to get the knowledge and the confidence, then those are the key things I see that lead to the next level of success.
I have to agree with you on that. I think that if someone is listening to this and they know that their future, the vision that they have for their future and what they want lies in the idea of having an online business, that is the means, that's the way that they're going to get their freedom, their mobility, the lifestyle that they want to get. So if it is online business, just find something. It almost doesn't matter what it is that you choose, as much as it is that you just start somewhere. Because like Stefan said, you start something and you get into this world, the online world for entrepreneurs with e-commerce businesses or even something else online. And it will open up different doors. You're going to discover different things and you're going to gain experience. And it's going to lead to the next thing. That's been my experience. That's been your experience. I had lunch with a friend the other day. She started selling, I think she started on Amazon selling gummy bears with like collagen or something in it. And you know, that business was, she calls it, you know, her learning experience. And she learned from that business. She sold the business, but I don't think she made much money on it. But from there, she gained a lot of experience and confidence, and now she started another business it's tailored towards mothers postpartum, I think a supplement business, and it's thriving. It's doing so well. She's had to open up an office. She's already had to close it down because she ran out of space. They have to get a bigger office. Wow. She's employed people. Like it's gotten, it's progressed so fast, and it's become so successful so fast, not out of luck, but because she already had some experience from just getting her foot in the door. Wow. With her initial e-commerce business. And so if I have anything to encourage you guys, it's just get started with something, because we are both your biggest cheerleaders when it comes to encouraging you to start an online business, because we know that it can provide a ton of freedom in your life, both economically, but also just the freedom of just working from wherever, whenever. And so start with something, and maybe wholesaling on Amazon is it, because it is lower risk, because you don't feel like you have to to put down so much to get results. So it can be a good way to kind of get your foot in the door and have a taste of the business.
Yeah. And I think also, especially those that don't want to put themselves out there, they don't want to be the face of the brand. You know, there's certain things like that too, that not everyone is willing to do. And so, you know, like we were always willing to do that. That was one of the key things from our success is that we put ourselves out there. You know, we put ourselves on YouTube. We put ourselves on social media. We really wanted to get behind selling our product.
It wasn't even that I wanted to do that. I didn't go into it with the intention of I'm going to become a YouTuber and I'm going to put my face on my brand. I actually said, I'm just willing to do whatever it takes. Yeah. And yeah. I really was willing to do whatever it takes, willing to learn whatever it takes to become successful. And that's why when I was building my business, I learned how to do everything myself before I ever hired someone to do it for me, everything.
Yeah.
And that's why when people come up to me and they say, well, I don't know how to do this and I don't know how to do that. It's one of my biggest pet peeves because to me, that is not the mindset of success. And to me, when I hear people complaining about all the things that they don't know how to do and that they have to do and that they don't want to do, and then I think, well, you know what? You don't want success bad enough because if you want it bad enough, you will be more than happy to open up Mr. Google and use this free platform to research and learn about how to do all these different things and get started, get to work.
And I think that's you know, one thing that we've always preached is the value of an online course or mentorship, because it will really help you accelerate and streamline that path towards a certain result. Otherwise, it kind of feels like, I've always used this analogy, it's almost like if you're in the jungle and you're trying to get to a certain destination, I mean, and you've never been there before and you don't know how to survive out there, I mean, you're going to get eaten alive. You're going to get eaten by the bugs. You're going to get lost. You're going to, you know, experience so many pitfalls and just challenges to finally get to where you want to be. And if you want it bad enough and you're committed enough, then by all means, you can definitely do that. And that's a lot of people that I see that are just trying to figure things out on their own and just aimlessly trying to piece together all this information from all these random sources of, you know, I'm going to learn a little bit from this blog and I'm going to learn a little bit from this YouTuber and I'm going to learn a little bit here. And I'm going to try to put all of this together to kind of get somewhere. Versus on the other hand, if I were to say you're in the jungle and I were to give you a map, someone that actually has already gotten from here to there, and they've gone back and forth many times, and this map has not only worked for them, but they've given this map to many other people, and it also helped people. And not to say that, you know, when you go down the map, there's still challenges. You could still get lost. You could still, you know, whatever, but you're more likely to get there. Like, you're more likely to get there much easier. You still could. Yes. You could still fail no matter what, even if you have a course. And then even further, you know, if I were to give you like a GPS system, you know, where it's just, you know, if you get stuck or lost, you'll have a guide that will come and help you pick you up and redirect you and help you get on. Like, that's where the mentorship and the one-on-one coaching and group coaching. I mean, it's just common sense. It's just efficiency. It's just what you value your time at. It's just, you know, it just doesn't make sense not to get mentorship training courses. Why would you not? Like, it's just not intelligent to do things another way. Even if it costs money to invest in something, it makes more sense to find ways in your life to make that extra money by selling shit you don't need, working extra hours at your job, getting a second job just to make the money to get that map. Because that map is going to save you, most people don't realize, weeks, months, years. I mean, I spent years and money. And not only that, just the trauma of failure and disappointment, and people get in this negative spiral. And then because they failed, because they try to do things on their own, they have this negative perspective that
nothing works.
I can never succeed. So you kind of like save yourself from a lot of that negative journey. So I think there's plenty of opportunities and courses, whether, you know, we know a few, but we don't know everything that's out there, but like, not just for this, any aspect of your life. You want to get in better shape. You want to have a better relationship.
I've been learning how to cook since becoming a mom. I've been learning more about how to work in the kitchen. And I've taken courses on that. Yeah. I've taken courses on traditional ways of preparing food and fermentation. And it's been super valuable for me to learn these things. And so we are both big proponents on getting courses, and not because we're trying to sell you on a course, but because we just see it as the path of least resistance. Yeah. And a lot of people get caught up on, well, I can't afford to hire a mentor or a coach right now. Well, then get a course. You know, I actually find that when you're first getting started, the course is going to be of much more value to you than a mentor or coach, because you're such a beginner that the foundational principles that you're going to learn is going to be laid out so beautifully in a course that you can watch and rewatch as many times as you want, and you're going to get so much more value out of that for your money, versus if you just hire a mentor. I don't think you'll get as much value in the very beginner stages. I think mentorship comes in very handy once you do have a little bit more experience, once you've launched your product on Amazon, and now you're like, you know, you've grown a little bit, but you're stuck. You're at that point of stagnation and you just need feedback on, like, how can I improve this? You know, give me a different perspective that I'm just not seeing right now. That's where I think mentorship is extremely valuable.
Yeah, you know, I was just doing like a coaching thing, and this one person said in their business with their partner, they feel burnt out, they hit a plateau, you know, they don't know how to scale beyond. Like, that's perfect for bringing in a coach, a consultant, a mentor. They can look at what you've done. They can look at, and they can point you in the right direction, point out things that you might not be able to notice or see yourself. Versus at the beginning, a coach is just going to tell you like exactly what's in the course. You know, it's just it's just not efficient way to spend your money paying them hour by hour at such a high rate, when you can buy the course at the fraction of the cost of what it'd be to hire a mentor one-on-one. And, you know, you can already get the basics and hit the ground running and get to a certain point. That's when it makes sense to get the mentorship and that support when you need it. So, the course that we have learned about, like there's some different ones. There's the Wholesale Formula we've been involved with, but I'm most impressed with Marketplace Superheroes course Accelerate by Stephen Summers. Mostly because he has a much easier process for finding the distributors than it seems like.
So with other wholesale programs, it's about teaching you to go and contact these individual brands and then ask to become a, you know, reseller of the products. And so that means you contacting lots of different brands. People, and with Steven's course, what he teaches you is actually how to find the distributors. And the distributors, they have a whole catalog full of brands.
So many products, thousands.
So it makes it a lot easier for you, because your goal is just to find one distributor. And from that one distributor, you...
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy California red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA choice boneless beef chuck roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now have the connection to
one point of contact rather than many. And
it's a more efficient approach.
At least when you're starting out. At least when you're starting out, and then maybe there's more exclusive products or opportunities that you can get the exclusive rights to resell, which could maybe be a greater advantage for you. But anyways, he has a fantastic course on this and has been helping a lot of people from it. And people have been getting much better results with this than with his private labeling courses as well. So they've really pivoted a lot to this because it just made sense to with that. But if you guys want to check that out, we'll throw links in the description for that. But really, there's so many opportunities and models. And I think for most people first starting out, you just don't know what the opportunities are. Yeah. And even for us, we don't know all the opportunities out there. Like, even just last night or the last few days, you know, we'll go on YouTube sometimes in the evening time, we'll watch different videos that we like, these intellectual types of videos, these figures who just debate people. And, you know, we really enjoy just kind of hearing different debates on some of these important topics. And there's a lot of videos now where basically people take someone else's video that is already like a public figure and gets hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of views on their videos. And then they create these reaction videos, right? So basically what they're doing is they're taking someone else's content, which I guess, you know, there's no issues with that. I mean, the person can file a copyright complaint, but also I think on YouTube now you can state if you want to allow people to reuse your content.
Yeah, there's a certain license for those videos that they're allowed to repurpose.
Yeah, so they're basically taking like a viral video And then they're just like in the corner in the video posting a reaction, which reaction is just them. It's not even that. It's sometimes just like listening to something. So you're just watching a video with someone else's face at the bottom corner.
Yeah.
And sometimes they commentary, but I'm like, for me, I'm just like, I don't care what you, like, I'm here for the video. You're just using this guy's video to get views on your channel.
And it's very smart because here they are, you know, maybe they don't have content that they want to create themselves on YouTube, but they're taking someone else who has a name, using their name, providing a catchy headline or title for YouTube, or, you know, a SEO optimized title using their name. And they're getting thousands of views on this content that's not even theirs.
Yeah. And they're making money from the YouTube ads or, you know, whatever else.
So that just goes to show that's just one of many, many different ways that you can be making money online. And, you know, it doesn't take a genius to do
that. So the thing is, like, I've actually seen this enough times that, hey, for me being in this space, I know someone's created a course on this. Someone's actually teaching this as a method. You know, they've done this enough times on YouTube that you can buy a course and someone will teach you how to do this very thing. And there's people making thousands of dollars a month doing this. So it's just one example. I mean, there's probably better ways to make money or more ways that aren't integrous or whatever. I don't know. But there's just so many ways like that now with AI and whatever else. You know, like if someone really does want to make money online, I mean, there's just so many ways. You just have to go down the rabbit hole a bit. You have to, and that's can be hard to do. Maybe at first you don't know what to look for, but that's why starting somewhere is key. And that's what, going back to what we were saying, if you started with Amazon, you go down that path, you gain experience, you gain knowledge, you make some money, you get some confidence. And then that opens up other doors, because then you start to see these other opportunities at different times. You might go to a networking event or a conference, you meet people, you hear what other people are doing. And I found just kind of the whole niche of entrepreneurship and being an internet marketer, you know, can really open up your eyes to a whole new lifestyle and a whole new way of living life. And, you know, for us, there's no way we could ever go back to having a job and living how we did before. So, you know, I think if you're someone that wants to do this, go for it. You have our support, our encouragement. We've noticed the benefits more and more as time goes on of the decisions that we made early on of starting online businesses. I mean, the benefits just get greater and greater, especially having a family, being able to be very present in our child's life and parent the ways that we want to, and having the finances and the freedom and all that that comes with it. It just makes your life so much easier. Your future becomes so much easier if you can make decisions today that will benefit you 5-10 plus years down the road. So, All right. So check out, you guys can check those out if you'd like. Let's transition to some relationship stuff. I know you only have so much time. So we were talking before this, you know, people send relationship questions to my Life Mastery Accelerator program. It's a program I do once a month, been doing it for years.
Which I encourage you guys to join if you appreciate Stefan's mentorship, because he adds so much value.
I don't promote it that much or anything.
He doesn't promote it, something that I kind of group of people and hung on to doing. He just answers all these questions for these individuals. Many people ask multiple questions, and you just you spend as long as it takes, like hours sometimes, just answering questions. And I listen to you from the other room, and I'm like, wow, that's good value. Like, you've got good stuff.
It's always something that I kept doing even during the months where I just stopped publishing YouTube videos, kind of retired and stuff, because I always enjoyed just that. It's not a big commitment for me. It's just a once a month type of thing. But we've got a great group of people that every month, you know, we talk about their lives and answer questions. And I enjoy just kind of hearing different, I like to mentor and help and support and whatnot. So anyways, there's a few questions. Relationship questions are very common that we both get. I think a lot of people, they've over the years on YouTube and whatnot, seen our relationship, seen it grow. They're inspired by it. And there's a lot that we've learned and things that we can share with that. We have a valuable perspective, I think, that's really helped us in a relationship to be where we are. And it's an area of life that we take seriously. We've always been growing in and learning things and trying to apply different things. It's by no means a perfect relationship. You know, I think sometimes people maybe look at a relationship and they, you know, I get questions like, you know, they just kind of expect, like, you know, they feel like their relationship's not perfect in comparison to ours. And so they ask questions like, should I leave my partner because my relationship's not, you know, 10 out of 10 and all these different things. And no, our relationship's not perfect. We've had some challenges at times and things like that too, but it is amazing. It is a great relationship that we have. So, and I think there's certain things that help our relationship to be in that place. I think there's a lot of growth that we have each done individually. And I think when you bring together two people who are happy, positive, givers, hard workers, you know, they just kind of have certain attributes. Two people like that together, you're going to generally have a great relationship. You have two people that are both depressed and negative and complain a lot and have certain negative attributes like that. Put them together, you're going to have a negative relationship. So I think the work that we've both done has been crucial, but also the work we've done together, because for us, we've done so many seminars and we read the same books and listen to the same podcasts and listen, you know, we basically have consumed countless hours of content and material and done so much growth together that really laid a foundation, especially early on in our relationship. And it's almost like we speak the same language. And this is something that I was saying to someone. I was encouraging people on my stream to do like a Tony Robbins Date with Destiny seminar. This is an event that he does where it's his most powerful program, but it really goes into your values. And there's a relationship day and you create a vision for your relationship. And you really learn a lot about yourself, but also about your partner too. And the reason why I think this is so valuable is it really starts that foundation for your relationship where you can speak the same language. Like you and I, we can say the same words about values and levels of consciousness and
love languages
and all these things. Like we can communicate on that level and point things out and give each other feedback and discuss mm-hmm. things because we've already each studied and learned these things at a certain level. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really valuable to have in a relationship. So one thing that I was sharing with this one person about the relationships is the reason why I think it's so valuable to do this personal development, go to Tony Robbins or whatever else, especially before you're getting married, which a lot of people would reach out to me that they're engaged or they've been in a relationship for a couple of years, is because I believe that there's no greater investment that one's going to make in their life than the investment in a relationship. And that investment is the greatest risk that I think most people will take in their life. You know, I've always believed it's the most important decision in your life. I've seen the consequences of not a great decision of choosing who you're going to spend your life with. This is the person that you're going to spend the rest of your life with and maybe even have a family with too. And I've seen my parents, they've both been through two divorces. You know, your parents have been divorced. You know, you look in our society today, the divorce rate is like 50% or something crazy. And obviously there's massive consequences to a divorce, not just financial, you know, being separated and lawyers and all that sort of stuff, but also the emotional consequence, the time that you feel you've invested in this relationship and with this person that you've now lost, the consequences on kids and how that's going to affect their life. You know, so it's because the risk is so great, you know, how could you not invest time, energy, and money, resources to making sure that it's the right decision for you, that if you're going to commit yourself to someone, that you don't build that foundation of personal growth and maybe do some seminars and, you know, do some retreats and do some work on that to determine how compatible you are, what you have in alignment, you know, what are, you know, some techniques and tools and things that you can learn that can help support you in overcoming conflicts that might occur in a marriage. Mm-hmm. So I just always felt that making that investment early on, and that's one thing that we did. You know, we went to seminars, audio programs, books, all these things that really served and benefited us. So, you know, one of the challenges, which we can maybe start with, that a lot of people bring to us is they might share that they have one partner that's into self-development, for example, but their partner isn't. You know, and they've discovered this world of wanting to improve yourself and your life. And there's a certain mindset you take on when you're into self-development, where it's just you want to get better and better. And you can't understand why someone wouldn't want to improve themselves or improve their relationship. But on the other hand, their partner's reluctant to get into that. They don't want to change. They're afraid of change. You know, they don't want to change their eating habits or their lifestyle or whatever it might be. And they're closed-minded to it. And they might even make fun of you with you trying to share things with them or setting goals or whatever. And they might even hold you back because they feel like they're going to lose your love if you change and they don't. They're going to be left behind. So you want to talk a little bit about this just in terms of how you feel important that is. Mm-hmm. And that's really a value that if it's important enough to you in your life, you have to make sure that you find someone that also shares that value, because otherwise you're going to grow apart.
Yeah. So I think that if you and I, if I didn't value growth in the ways that you did, I don't think we'd be together.
No.
And so when we first met, it was very clear to me that you valued growth, and you understood that about me as well, that I'm very open. I'm very open-minded. I want to learn everything. I was a sponge. I was so excited to learn, and you saw in me that I also valued growth. Mm-hmm. And I think that
And not just because I was courting you and you wanted to me to like you, and so you tried to become a certain way to,
because that you, happens. In fact, you were worried about that, because I remember one time you asked me, we were in the car driving to Whistler, I think, and you asked me, do you really like Tony Robbins, or are you just, you know, saying that because, you know, you want to impress me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like, my girlfriend that I had before you, she, you know, many other women would say, oh yeah, I'm into self-development, but only because, you know, they like really, you and want to be with
don't
you.
Don't really know what self-development means. I think a lot of people have a very superficial understanding of self-development.
And maybe they are, but they're not, like, there's a difference between interested in it and actually doing the work.
Yes. Yeah.
And learn, like, going out of your way to read books.
They ideas of it, but they don't actually apply it in their own lives. That's the big difference. So you and I both value growth very much. It's one of our top values. And I think that helps us to be compatible. If we were compatible in every other way, but if I wasn't into growth, I think you would have a very hard time being with me, you know, because it's such a high value of yours.
It's what I talk about and, you know, what we discuss.
Yeah. So I think for the people who are like you and like me and who are really valuing personal growth, I think that it is a deal breaker if your partner doesn't as well. And I think that, so the reason being is because everyone is going to grow in life. You know, every single experience that you have on the day-to-day basis, every experience shapes you. So you're growing through every interaction with another person. Mm-hmm. You're building memories. You're building references. All of that is going to shape you, and you're going to grow in life. So in a 10-year period, everyone is going to grow. Now, the question is, how fast are you going to grow and in which direction? And so someone who values personal growth, they're probably going to grow at a much more rapid rate than someone who isn't investing daily into their own personal development, someone who isn't investing into reflecting, self-reflection, you know, what it is that's causing suffering in my life, what can I improve in my life, and then putting in the hours and putting in the work to do that growth. So they're going to grow probably a lot more rapidly than someone who isn't conscious of that and working towards that. And what happens in a relationship is that when someone else is growing rapidly and someone isn't, you're going to grow in different directions and you're going to grow apart. And that's why that person who isn't into personal development, they're going to be fearful of the one who is, because they know intuitively that they're going to grow apart from them, and they want to pull them down as an attempt to hold on to them out of fear. They want to, you know, maybe they do make fun of their personal growth and they say, oh, that is corny or that is nerdy of you. But it's their way to kind of keep them where they are, keep them little. It's a small poppy syndrome, so that they don't grow past them. Yeah. And so I think that, like, for certain values like that, I do think that they are really important. And that's why it's good to know what your values are when you're young before you enter into this contract of marriage. Because for us, like, marriage is serious. Marriage is a lifelong commitment. It's not something that you take lightheartedly. And so you want to know who you are. You want to know what you value in your life. And you want a great understanding of your partner as well before you make those commitments.
Mm-hmm. And you're not going to see the growth of direction growing apart or together in the short term. You're going to more see it over the years. Day to day, you're not going to notice maybe those differences. But, you know, for many people, I think they'll wake up one day, 5 years, 10 years down the road, and be like, what happened? We're like different people. Like, who are you? Like, I'm into this, and you have this life where you go to the gym, you're healthy, you're reading, you're learning things, you want to travel, you want to build a business, you want to do all of that. And then the other person's just living a totally different life than you. And that's where it becomes very problematic. And I think for in relationships, it's very easy that people tend to want to avoid painful aspects of the relationship. They don't want to look at parts of it where they're not you know, it's not going well or great. And so they just kind of sweep that under the rug until one day, one day you can't do that anymore. And it just hits you in the face and you have to be honest with yourself. And then that's a very difficult time and experience to go through. Yeah. So I think really what the growth is about for me is just a level of consciousness and awareness throughout my life, throughout my relationship. Because at different times you have to be aware of what aspects of yourself and your life and your relationship do you want to improve and make better, and be willing to so, you know, kind of going back to what we said about opportunities, sometimes you have to gain the experience and the knowledge to be able to notice and observe and be even aware of different opportunities. It's the same thing that when you're doing a lot of growth and reading and learning, you now kind of have a heightened level of awareness where you can actually see things that most people won't be able to see in their own lives and relationship, which is very useful.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think going back to the values piece, you know, one thing that one of the reasons why I recommended the Tony Robbins seminar is that Date with Destiny, he helps you elicit what is the most important values that you have in your life, the most important, let's say, top 10 values. And you elicit them just by asking the question, what's important to you in life? You know, what's most important to you in life? And so you might say love, you might say family, you might say success, you might say money, you might say travel, you might say fitness and health, you might say adventure, you might say security, you might say
family.
You might say your faith and your spirituality. You know, all of these things you might say that you value, and we'd probably all agree that we value those things, but we don't all value them equally. And so when you elicit what's important to someone, you have to then determine what the hierarchy of those values are. And you go through each one of your values on your list and you say, what's more important to you? Is it love or is it success? You know, is it love or is it, you know, travel? Is it success or is it security? You know, and oftentimes people have some values that might be in conflict with other values. And you might have to readjust those to get to where you want to be. But what's really important about that is that if both you and your partner do this, you want to make sure that you're in alignment with the most important values. So an example would be family. You know, let's say that one person values family, they want to have kids, and that's very important to them. But the other person, you know, doesn't really want to. Then in the short term, you can have a great relationship. You can have passion, fun. It could be a great relationship. But 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road, that's going to be a problem. You know, so you're going to, you know, that's a misalignment of values. If one person, let's say, is into spirituality and they believe in God, and for them, it's really important to grow spiritually, and the other person's an atheist, you can have a great relationship in the short term, a year, 2 years, 3 years, but 10 years, 20 years down the road, you know, what's the impact that that's going to have? You're going to feel separate from your partner. You're going to maybe be judgmental towards each other, hold each other back. It's going to be a conflict. And so when you, you know, not everything has to be in alignment. Like, you don't have to find someone who has every little thing in common with, but the most important things, you need to know what those are. And you have to make sure that you find someone that shares those most important things. If you really want a seamless, smooth, stress-free, enjoyable, thriving relationship, in my opinion.
And that's why I don't think that love is everything. I think love is the foundation, and that any relationship should be built on love. But I think that if all you have is love and you don't have any of these shared values that are important, I think the relationship will inevitably fall apart. And so for us, we knew, like, love, you know, I think personally love comes easy, at least for me. I feel people are very lovable. I can fall in love with many people. But with us, you know, I knew I loved you. You knew you loved me. But we wanted to make sure that we had something much more long lasting. You know, we wanted to build on a relationship that had these common values. And so I think that's really key for some, for long lasting relationships. I think it is just having this self-reflection, understanding what it is that you want in life, what you value in life, and then having that understanding of your partner.
Well, I think, you know, what love is, what's so powerful about love is that it's such a powerful force that people would change their values because they love someone so much. You know, one person can value this or that, but that love could be so powerful and so strong that the person's willing to change what they value. And, you know, like, for example, some people, they really value their career and their success. And you know, it's maybe not until something happens in their family or the relationship, you know, many people might be willing, if that love is strong enough, they might be willing to give up their career for their family or for, you know, something they love even greater than that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, your values, I think, are really, really key. And that definitely is a foundational piece. Now, I know you have an appointment. How much more time?
Yeah, you have another 30 minutes.
30 minutes? Okay. All right. So how about we dive into a question? So just on that topic, this one person says, you said that it's important to have aligned values. And I asked my fiance her top values. And he determined a list of 40 to 50. Now, this person didn't really determine the hierarchy of values, but he said that many of the things that she values are luxury, money, faith, love, loyalty, beauty, like bags and makeup, and justice because she does law. And she also said personal development. But when I asked for clarification, she said kind of plain things like, I want to grow professionally. I want to have a positive mindset. And he's afraid that she's driven by significance too much and concerned, you know, overly concerned about how she looks and what people think of her. And he's asking if that's a deal breaker. So one of the things I've learned from Tony Robbins is another model, which is the six human needs, and significance is one of those needs, which we all value, but there's also a hierarchy of. And so if you value significance above all your other needs, above, let's say, love or certainty or uncertainty or growth, then the challenge when you overvalue significance is that you never feel like you have enough. You're always comparing yourself to others. And you're never really happy or satisfied. And oftentimes you get caught up in materialism, which is, you know, being overly concerned about your looks and how many followers you have and, you know, designer luxury things. And, you know, we all know that people on social media and whatnot that have this overly exaggerated luxury lifestyles, they're often people that are very driven by significance. And so that can be very problematic in a relationship when someone overvalues significance. Especially over some of these other needs. And so just with what he was saying here, what are your thoughts on that about, you know, his partner valuing these things and being too concerned about that?
Well, I think, you know, to value significance is actually very common. I think most people have significance as one of their top
most people in our society.
Most
for sure.
people in our society. So she's, you know, she's not the anomaly here. She's the majority of people. But that's not to say that just because it's common that it's necessarily what's best for someone. So to value significance above all else does have its consequences. When you value that above love, above all these other things, there are consequences to that. So that's going to personally affect her life. And her value, that might change over the years. You know, I find that as you grow older, some of these values, they shift. Maybe you value significance less. I don't know, maybe she's in her early 20s or maybe even later 20s, and you tend to be influenced by the culture, and this culture is very significance driven. So I might say, you know, maybe it's kind of normal what the stage that she's at, and as she matures more, that might change. And maybe, you know, not to worry too much about it. But I will say, like, yeah, when someone is very significance driven, it can be challenging because they're going to always be looking to feel significant and also looking for ways that they feel insignificant. Yeah. So because they value significance so much, they're going to notice anytime that you say something that makes me feel insignificant. And so they're going to feel very insignificant in life because they value significance.
And when it's such a high value, like if that's number one on your list, significance, then when you feel insignificant, that's like the scariest thing in the world because that's your number one value that's not being met, or your number one need that's not being met. And, you know, you're going to have it's going to have a very emotional impact on you, and you're going to feel like you're not enough.
And that's why you'll see, like, some women, they'll be $100,000 in debt by buying luxury bags. And you think, how crazy is that? How could you be $100,000 spending money you don't have for purses? But it's because they value significance that much. Them, it's like life and death. You know, for them, it's like, I need to feel significant above all else. And so, you know, similarly, like, for example, my mom, she values respect so much. respect is like her top thing. And so because she values it so much, she's always looking for ways that people are disrespecting her. And because she's looking for it, she finds it very often. Mm-hmm. So it's just something to note that if you're with someone who values significance so much that you can understand their behavior and their emotional reactions a lot more. Mm-hmm. And then also realizing that they're going to value significance above love, right? And so they might, you know, the goal is to ultimately people want to feel significant because they think it's going to get them to love, but they might put their significance before, you know, their love, before their relationship, before the things.
They'll choose a partner for the money, let's say, or for the looks or what it, you know, represents, a trophy wife or, you know, the status or whatever they get from that, more than the love. Right. And that's what's dangerous about that is that if you are in a relationship where someone it is based on that, and that's very common. You see, obviously, people relationships that are together based on those superficial factors. But the problem with that, that's not an authentic, genuine love of a relationship because it's conditional. That if you lose that significance, if your partner doesn't have the money, or if you can't provide for you a certain quality of lifestyle, or whatever it is, then you're going to find, you know, people end up leaving that person to replace them with someone else because they're so driven by that significance. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people, as you said, what they really want deep down inside is love, you know, and we're all born out of love, unconditional love. You know, we're all loved by our parents. You know, that's why we're here. We wouldn't be able to survive without that powerful force of love. But I think some people get distorted in our society to value significance. They don't feel like they're enough, and they're being marketed and sold to that you're not enough, and you need to have this, and you need to have that, and you need to have money, you need to look a certain way, and then you'll be significant. And when you're significant, you'll be worthy of love. And that's just an illusion that is not true. And you know, people, I think deep down want love, but I think the other needs that you need to value more at a certain point in your life, which it could be fine when you're young and at a certain level of consciousness to be consumed by that. I know I was, but it's being driven by the other needs, which are love or growth or
contribution.
You know, these are needs that are more sustainable, more fulfilling, and much better in a relationship. And I know when I met you, the very first day that I met you, because I knew this, I had this understanding from all the self-development work that I had done. I'd done Date with Destiny and all these other experiences before I had met you. And I was able, because I had this understanding, I was able to, in my interactions with people, I could identify based on what they'd say and what they're into, and how they respond to me. I can know what their values are, and I can get an idea of what, you know, their hierarchy is. And for you, there's a few things that I remember from the first date was you're really into contribution. You know, you were volunteering with seniors, you were volunteering with horses, you were traveling to Brazil to volunteer with an NGO. And so I was really impressed by that, especially because for me, I valued contribution as well. You know, I was volunteering and I was getting more into that, and that was a really important thing for me. Another thing was spirituality. And I knew that that was important to you right away. That you believed in God, and you know that was an important part of your life. And I knew that for me, wow, you know, so right away, like right when I had met her, within the first hour or two, I already had two values that were like high up on the list, two of these top needs for me that you also shared. And so I knew that you were different. I knew that that, you know, that was something that I valued and I was looking for. And I also knew the love. You know, I could sense just your beingness, and you loved your dog, and you loved, you know, helping people, and you're just very, you know, a great friend. Like the first day, I remember we went to Granville Island, and you know, bought something for your friend, and you bought something for your dog, and you know, I could tell just by my communication that you weren't just focused on you, that you're focused on others. And so I think that's one of the values of that, is when you have, and going back to that language piece, that when you have understanding, we both can communicate in this way now, and maybe how you're listening to us, you know, requires an explanation of these things that we're sharing with you guys. But because we've both been through it, we're on the same page with that. And I think that's so useful to have in a relationship, to know that. But I think just kind of having that foundation of alignment is such an important piece in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Okay, how about we dive to another one? Okay, another question is, my fiance always asks me to do stuff for her, like hold the door, holding her bag, etc., which I don't really like. I don't like to wear a bag, etc. If I don't do these things, she starts crying and feeling very hurt. And I understand you should be in a mindset of serving the other's need, but I feel like I did a lot of small compromises like that, and it's becoming a relationship that I don't like. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that he needs to step outside of himself and have an understanding. This is another thing that, you know, if he understood, for example, the 5 love languages, this is one concept, you read a book about it, you understand this concept for the rest of your life, and it serves you for every single relationship you have, including non-intimate relationships. And you understand, wow, there's 5 different ways that people feel loved. And some people feel loved in ways that are different than how I feel loved. And a lot of people who don't understand this, they think that the way that I feel loved is how other people feel loved. And so when they try and give love to their partner, they're doing the things that would make them feel loved, but their partner isn't receiving the love because they're like, I don't understand this. This, like, I don't care if you make me dinner, or I don't care if you buy me a purse, or, you know, like, it, for them, it's not their love language. And so what it sounds like is that for her, her love language is acts of service. So when she asks you to hold the door open or to hold her bag or whatever it is that he mentioned, for her, it's not just the act itself. It's not this meaningless momentary act of holding my bag. For her, when she asks you to hold her bag, it means that you love her. Like, it has so much more meaning than the meaning that you attribute to the act. So for you, it's these small compromises, as you stated, but for her, it means the world. It means love.
Yeah.
And so, so when you step outside of yourself and you realize it from that perspective, you might think, wow, if it really means that much to her, and if I do love this person, then I'm more than happy to make these small requests on her, of her, to help meet that need for her. Like, and what a luxury for you as a man that your woman is explicitly telling you how it is that you can make her feel loved. Because the truth is, most of us women, we leave our men in the dark. We let them fend for themselves. We say, you know what? You're just gonna have to figure me out. And I change every day. Every day what I want is different, and you're gonna have to figure it all out on yourselves. And so you have a woman here who is literally telling you, like, do this for me. And all you have to do is tune into the fact that she's not just asking you to do something. She's asking you to do it because for her, that makes her feel loved. So I think it's actually a big gift that you have someone who's, like, written it out for you, their love language. And it's a simple request for you to honor that. I'd say, like, maybe, her reaction to cry if you don't do something like that can be, you know, maybe a little bit emotionally immature. But, you know, I think that, so that's okay, you know, just, like, give her the space, and maybe she's very feminine, and, you know, allow her to express herself.
Well, she might be making it mean that he doesn't love me.
Yeah.
You know, and that can hurt, and that can, you know, we all kind of make up these crazy meanings and interpretations of these simple things. Some of these things might be instilled in us at a young age unconsciously, you know, that, you know, this means this or this means that. And so, yeah, like, I think I kind of look at it also from the levels of consciousness. There's I've shared before, there's a whole different language of levels of consciousness. But even just the levels of love, which is something I like that I've learned from Tony, is level one is that you're focused on you. It's a very egocentric position. It's all about me, 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 me. If I don't get what I want, I have a tantrum. And, you know, that might be the case on both sides here, where it's like, well, I don't want to do this for you. And the other person, if they don't receive this, what they want, then they have a tantrum.
Which, by the way, this is the level that our 1-year-old son
is at. Second level is trading. So I'll do this for you, but I'm doing it because I'm also expecting something back. And I'm expecting to reciprocate. I'm keeping track. I'm measuring things. You know, I'll cook and I'll clean and I'll, you know, take out the trash and everything. But I have a hook on the end of that, expecting something else in return. And I'm going to hold you to that, because it's about a quality which doesn't exist in a relationship. Because then the problem with that is you're always measuring what you're giving and what you're receiving. And a relationship, number three, is just a place you go to give. It's about love, unconditional love. You just, it's not about, you know, I'm doing more for you than you're doing for me. And, you know, it's just the best relationships is if you can get to a point where it's like a fun game or a competition where you love giving so much to your partner. You love lighting them up. You believe that their needs are my needs. And so therefore, I'm going to give. and you're competing with each other to see who can give more, you know? And if you do that, you're going to have a love slave. You're going to have an incredible relationship because it requires a standard of love where you love no matter what, even if they don't deserve it, even if they hurt you, even if they are not loving you back, but you are a leader in the relationship where you just decide, I'm going to love and I'm going to give to my partner. Mm-hmm. And I think this sounds a little bit of level one or level two. And, you know, you're going to have a level one or level two relationship. It's realizing that this is an opportunity for me to give and meet my partner's needs. We've all heard the saying, happy wife, happy life. It works both ways. I know that if you do something simple like this, where you hold open the door and she feels loved and she feels important, she feels like a princess and whatever she's made that mean, well, do you not think that's going to come back to you? Do you not think that she's going to feel so great? Wow, I feel so special. I have a man that's so amazing that she's going to want to give back to you. You know, or there might be little instances that occur in a relationship, which all happen, whether it's an annoyance or whatever. Those things, they don't blow up. They don't become issues when you're in that heightened state of love. You know, like it's like when you're first dating and everything, you're just giving so much to each other and you're such in a great state of love. You don't care if they left the cap off the toothpaste. Like, but if you're depleted and your needs are not being met, then you're going to maybe be triggered by these little stupid things like, you know, they left their laundry out or whatever else. And so it's just realizing, it's building the identity and the standard, I think, of being a giver, being a lover, and growing in your consciousness from an egocentric place to realizing that you are one with your partner and you're not separate from them. You know, you want to experience that level of oneness that you have and not let the ego get in the way and just, you know, be that lover. And I think also what this person maybe doesn't realize, because I don't know if they plan to have kids one day, but when you do have kids, as you know, we've known just from our short experience with it, I mean, you don't really, it's a luxury to have preferences. Oh, I don't want to hold open the door or this or that, because you have to get over that at some point, because at some point, you know, if you have a baby, you're going to be holding open the door for your wife in her stroller. You're going to be changing diapers. You're going to be holding the baby. You're going to be
holding the diaper bag.
Yeah, you're going to be holding the diaper bag. So you don't want to hold a bag. Well, you know, good luck with that, right? So these are all little things that you just have to grow and mature and step up to. It's boyish to becoming a man.
Yeah.
And I think there's still this childish, egocentric, which when you're single, you could be very egocentric because you're just focused on what you want and you want to be happy and you want this for your life, etc. But then when you have a relationship and then when you have a family, it's less about you. And that's how it kind of forces you to grow. It forces you spiritually. Not everyone does. Some people kind of stay in these low levels and it just creates problems and conflicts.
But most men, if they're still a boy by the time they, you know, get married, let's say, by the time they have their baby, they've become a man. Like overnight, you have to become a man.
Or if they don't, then they're going to be in a lot of suffering. And they might leave their partner or whatever else, right? Because they're stuck in that.
And this kind of brings us to like the conversation we were having the other day about choosing meaning over happiness. Because a lot of us were after this feeling of happiness, doing what makes us happy. I want to do this because it makes me happy. I don't want to do this because it doesn't make me happy. And when you think about it, happiness, you know, it's not a long lasting emotion. You know, I'm happy one moment, I'm not the next. And so what is more fulfilling over the long term is doing what has meaning in life. So if I think, for example, of us raising Lucas, we have days where, you know, we just can't wait until he gets to bed because he's been a little rugrat and it's tiresome. It's exhausting. And you just are so excited for him to like go take his nap. And of course, you're excited for him to wake up again, too. Yeah. But there's days like that. And so you don't want to do the things that you have to do in those moments. And you might feel like, well, then I only want to do what makes me happy. But over the long term, you find meaning in the raising of children and you find the most fulfillment in that meaning. And so I think it's striving more towards having meaning in life than it is over the temporary satisfaction of fleeting happiness.
Yeah. So true. Yeah. I mean, the meaning is what's lasting and the happiness, you know, you experience it, but then it's gone just like that. And you're always chasing it. Right. Yeah. So that's very, very true. So I know we got to wrap up here. So, you know, there's more that we can dive into. I can actually hear Kobe moaning outside.
Yeah, he's needs to go out.
Yeah, you want some attention or something. But yeah, I'm happy that we were able to do this. You know, we have been quite busy here in Vancouver and haven't had the best setup for this, but I'm happy that we had a chance to dive into some of this stuff and share with you guys. So any last words?
It's been nice chatting, and yeah, I got to get going. So,
all right. Well, thank you guys so much. We'll see you guys again. Maybe back in Panama when we'll do this again. But I hope you guys are doing amazing. And as usual, we appreciate all of your support. So thank you guys. God bless you. We'll see you again soon.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy California red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA choice boneless beef chuck roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.